unbeaten runs may bring about an extended season of good cheer into the January gloom, but they also put a number on your head, and Reading succumbed inside the intense Millwall cauldron on Saturday to seal their unbeaten streak and knock us back down to 16th in the Championship table. Welcome to episode 217 of the Tylerson Podcast with your host Mark Mayo, and join me on the other end of the line is Alan West, aka Westy. How's it going, mate?
Very well, thank you. Like you said, we did think it would come to an end at some point, and Millwall looked as good a chance as any.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the thing. When I think really the main headline, I suppose, from this is that our kind of hopes of being a playoff team and everything, we're not, in reality, we're not really going to know that we got any chance of getting actually into the playoffs. Still, like, you know, March, April is really the earliest that we can actually physically break into them now.
Yeah, again, an 8-point gap, I think it is now. It looks big. But as we know in Championship football, that can turn rather quickly, and that game in hand becomes super important this Wednesday.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk about that a bit later on. And just before we jump into the recap, a thank you, as always, to our sponsor, ZTZ Films. Hopefully, we'll be getting a few more of our little skits, a little bit of in between the sections fixed up to make those a bit more official. But thank you to them, and also to our Patreon subscribers who continue to give generously, and hopefully in the next few weeks we'll be adding a few more knickknacks to our audio quality and everything to make sure that works out to be as good as we can make it. And speaking of that, the Reading have just about had a decent week, obviously with that Blackpool win, but obviously with the unbeaten streak coming to an end against Millwall. So we'll jump into the recap now and discuss what's gone on this week.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Westy, a quick look back to that Blackpool FA Cup game then, and if I'd have said to you that we'd have won 2-0, you'd have been pretty happy with that, I imagine, and the fact that we made another 11 changes, I think it's a pretty decent result, all told.
It's a great result. I personally thought we was going to go down and get beat if the game went along the same pattern as the first game did. I was worried for them, but they acquitted themselves pretty well. I mean, Blackpool are on a bad run as well, we know that. But I thought they must have fancied their chances getting us back to their place on a dreary night. But yeah, the young lads who took the field that day and some of the older fellas who was with them done a great job. And it was a very professional performance. From what I see of the highlights, Blackpool had a few chances, but Reading were clinical, and I often say that's the difference between the divisions.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? And we had Sam Walker back in the team, and I think that was the main problem. A lot of fans thought, let's throw Luke Southwood in and give Walker, sort of take him out of the team and see what we can do. But he had a good game, and to be fair, as Andre Burley came in and, as we said in the last show, got bullied kind of in that first leg and didn't so much the second game. Danny Lodwin and Lucas Boyer looking decent up front. The thing is, on Walker, I would say, Westy, the problem is when we start asking for you know, Luke Southwood to be given a game, yes, there is an element of rolling the dice and what harm can it do. But also, I mean, Southwood as a goalkeeper prospect went on loan to Hamilton in Scotland in the last 6 months. And there's no reason for us to automatically assume that he is better than a goalkeeper like Walker, who has played, you know, for better or worse, and I think he's about 200 games in the Football League by now.
Yeah, I'm going to start by saying I think I gave him quite a slating last week, said I didn't particularly rate a goalkeeper Walker. But yeah, he did have a good game on this occasion. And I seem to remember when I looked at the reviews of him, I always tend to, when Reading buy a player, he always like to look at what their fans think of him. And you normally get a good indication of what sort of player you're getting. And they was quite sad to see him go. So he can play at that level. We know he has. He's got a good career in the lower leagues. And yeah, he had a good game on this occasion, and well done to him. But if you're not having good games against teams like Blackpool, then when are you having a good game? That's my other question.
No, it is a good point. And that's the thing. And I suppose we're probably going to see him again on the weekend against Cardiff. A quick look to that one before we do preview it later on. Are you confident with the idea that we'll go the same again, that we'll make another 11 changes and swap things around a lot?
I kind of hope we don't. I don't know about you, Mark, but I kind of hope that we, knowing now that we are at 8 points behind a playoff position, especially if we don't win the Forest game on Wednesday, you'd hope that Reading would think, well, this is a good opportunity to get a big club at home in the next round after Cardiff. You'd think they'd go for it. I'd be disappointed if we went out with a whimper. You are at home. There's players that aren't playing, first team players that could give a game. By all means, put some of the youngsters in. I mean, I would say this, you can fill positions right back, left back, but you can't fill positions in the middle. And I just want to point out one thing about McIntyre on the Tuesday night Blackpool game. Played very well. We've seen him on and off, and he looks more than equipped to be a Championship centre-back. So I'd like to see him again, but I think you'd have to have a well-recognised centre-back with him in this occasion, because Cardiff are going to be no pushovers, whatever team they put out.
Yeah, you've actually, that was the name that popped into my head then, is Dom McIntyre, who, again, is another academy product. And I suppose with the Southwood thing, I am kind of cautious with expecting too much of our academy players. But from when we've seen of McIntyre, looks like a perfectly well, you know, decent enough. Maybe over 46 games, you'd uncover some flaws. But I think for the cup games, at least, you'd be very happy to keep him in there. And yeah, we've actually got quite a lot of competition now for centre-back, with Miazga not really being able to get into the team. Morrison are more comfortable enough. But I would say that moving on to the Millwall game, we experienced, I suppose it's pretty inevitable, isn't it really, Westy, that we experienced with an aerial bombardment, and we weren't really able to deal with that. The two goals coming late on, the curse of the ex-player striking with Cooper getting the assist and then John Daly Bodvarsson getting the second goal. And I think the one stat that kind of says it for me is that we conceded 15 shots from inside the box, which I think was the equal most across the entire Football League on Saturday. That just suggests that they got the ball forward quickly. We didn't really know what to do with it. They had enough shots, and eventually, you know, that made the difference.
Yeah, I don't mean to blow my own trumpet, but I seem to remember saying I didn't see Reading score in there without Lucas Joe up front, because you've got no one to hold the ball. Bulldog done his usual. He ran around a lot, but he's weak on the ball and he gets pushed off it too easily and it gets him two centre-backs. So I was worried for Reading. I didn't think they'd be able to outpower him, outsprint him or outplay him. And that's exactly how it turned out. Going forward, I think it's going to be a problem as well. But like you said, that we give Millwall far too many opportunities to score goals. And eventually our defence cracked and they scored. And we didn't see any way back from there. I think we had a couple of half chances. I mean, Swift could have chucked his head across, but he went with his foot. But other than that, we didn't really threaten them, and they'd have been disappointed if we'd have come away with a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, it's fair enough. And the first goal, when it's an assist from Jake Cooper and a goal, you know the sort of goal it's been. And the second one was kind of that classic counter-attack that just, I suppose it doesn't happen at 0-0, does it? But what I would say is that a lot of people were slating George Puskas for getting caught on the ball about 20 yards out of just outside the area, and he gets caught on the ball and they break and score from that. I would say, I mean, it's a criticism of Puskas, obviously, that he loses the ball, but I would say that Puskas doesn't need to be on the ball there. That's not the sort of striker he is. When you're pressing and you're trying to create chances, especially a goal down, I would have Puskas just in the middle. I wouldn't even ask him to leave the penalty box, because I don't think he's that sort of striker that is going to link up and make things happen. He is a penalty box striker, and yeah, on the counter-attack, you can stick a ball over the top and he'll chase it. But generally speaking, we've seen a couple times now, with that QPR 2-2 draw we had away from home recently, he let the ball go there and they scored. It's all well and good saying that Puskas is, you know, giving the ball away, but he just shouldn't be there in the first place, in my opinion.
So yeah, Puskas, if you're bringing him on last 20 minutes or so, I think you want him in and around a box, around a penalty box. You don't want him straying too far. Like I said, our strike force, without Jow, and again, I said it earlier, I think I said it sort of 3 or 4 weeks ago, that he has become the pivotal focus of that centre-forward area. You need him to be playing up the front so you can hold the ball and you can bring other players into it. Without him, we really struggle to define what the others do. I mean, Bulldog, why anyone thinks he can play up front on his own as that central man, I don't know. We've seen week after week, if he does try and play that role, he gets bullied off the ball. He's not quick enough, not strong enough. He's great to have buzzing around someone because he's got the legs, but you can't expect him to hold a ball up especially against Millwall. But in general, even against Bradford the other week, I'm sorry, even against Blackpool the other week, he didn't really get sniff. He scored a great goal, but other than that, he was ineffective. And Puskas as well, I'm still trying to find out what sort of striker he is. I don't know about you, Mark, and what you think on this one, but Johnny was on last week and we talked about what does he offer you, and he said he's quick. I don't think he's quick. I don't think he's a skillful striker. Maybe he's a bit of a poacher, but we haven't seen enough of that to be able to say, yeah, he's that sort of Cureton-type striker. He's sort of average at everything and doesn't seem to be great at anything, if you know what I mean. He's not like Long. We can hold a ball, he's quick. He's not a Cureton, he's not a Lafondra. I'm trying to define what sort of player he is.
It's weird, isn't it? Because I remember I compared him to Glenn Murray early on in the season, because he's not brilliant at winning headers, actually. He's not really a target man that you can lump the ball up to. And he isn't quick. But when you get him on a driving run and he's heading towards goal, I think he's decent. That's a very narrow skill set to have, though. And I'm kind of leaning more towards the Pavel Pogrebniak comparison, because Pogrebniak wouldn't win that many balls in the air. He'd win more than Puskás because he's a bit bigger and he could hold onto the ball a bit better. But he wasn't quick or skillful or great at passing. He did have a knack to finish, though. And Puskás, I still think he probably does have that knack to finish. But the question is as to whether we're that sort of team at the moment. With the way that Bowen's setting us up, we are playing on the counter a lot. We are kind of, with the Fulham and Preston games you think about, we were, you know, under the cosh for a lot of the time. The Stoke and Barnsley away games as well, he's very happy for us to sit in. And Puskás, I'm not, maybe you can say he's a transition striker from midfield to attack, but yeah, I just don't see it enough. And I think that's the problem is that we're now at a stage of the season in January where we haven't actually seen any growth from him. When you talk about adaptation and those sort of things, yes, sometimes it can click and that can be that instantly, but what we haven't seen is any kind of gradual increase, have we?
No, we haven't. And again, I'm not saying it won't come, because he's still a young man. And it, again, I've said many a time that when someone moves from abroad to a different country, especially the Championship, the rigours of that league are quite hard and it takes a long time for you to settle in any new work. So he could next year, he could score 25 goals and we could all eat our own words. But at the moment, again, without Joao, I think so pivotal to that side. And even looking back in the last 10 years of Reading's success, you know what I mean? We've had Kermigan up front, who was different level, could hold the ball, win headers. Again, not quick, but could link play. And then Jason Roberts, who was an all-round good striker, strong, quick, you know, he could score goals, he'd link play up. And I think whenever Reading have been successful, they've had that sort of striker. And the strikers they've got without Joao in that team can't do any of that. So you either have to find a different way of playing or you have to find a different striker.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure whether there's no sign in January necessarily, even with Joao injured, that we are about to sign another striker. Although this could be, I suppose, with the Championship, you probably end up bottom feeding with the deadline day sort of stock and see if anything can drip down towards our level. But for the moment, I suppose, Westy, to kind of close off the recap, I mean, for me, I can just put this down as one of those games that over 46 game season you're going to have. Couldn't necessarily fight as well, but we couldn't get control of the game. Millwall are a very decent side at their own stadium. And yeah, we're just going to have to accept that this is the sort of level team we are. Not many teams are really going to go to Millwall and win, and not too many are going to go and get a point. We just couldn't pull out on the day, I suppose.
Yeah, let's not get too downbeat. Let's face it, we've been on a great run of form. It's a Championship. To have any, if you can string three or four games together, you're doing well. To get to the level that we did, we've done very well, and just means we've got to start it again. We've got some tough games coming up as well, so if we could start it again, then great. But it's the same as anything. Once you lose one game, you start looking ahead of you and think, well, that's a tough game, that's a tough game. Reading tend to do well in general, the tougher it is. It's the teams at the bottom I normally worry about, but yeah, it's a good run. Let's not get too downbeat about it. We still got a good side, we know we have. And like you said, not many teams go to Millwall and win games.
Well, let's jump into Mailbag then. And if anyone wants to be in touch over the next few weeks and months, obviously we're always available at The Tarlest End on Facebook and Twitter, and thetarlestend@gmail.com. Before we jump into Mailbag, though, let's hear from Mark Bowen on what he thought of the Millwall game.
I think we just almost like forgot to play. You know, we had the way the system lined up against theirs, we had a spare man in midfield. And I thought we were nervous from the start. Listen, of course, pitch wasn't a great pitch to play on, but that's never been an excuse. You know, we've got enough quality in there when we were in possession to get it down and play. And I thought we defended resolutely in the first half, albeit we let too many crosses into our box. But coming at half time and thinking, well, okay, encourage the guys to get on the ball and play a lot more. But you know, my assessment looking back on the whole match was we seemed nervous in possession. You know, when you come to places like this, you've got to be brave. You've got to get on the ball and play and show your qualities, which I didn't think we did today. Having said that, I thought that, you know, obviously it was one of those games that you thought one goal was going to change everything. And it certainly did, but at the same time, it was absolute certain handball. What, 2 feet in front of the referee, right in front of him, he's looking at it. 3 or 4 of our lads stopped to appeal for it, which, okay, they shouldn't do that. Should get on and play to the whistle, but they did stop. We should be better defending the cross, which we weren't. But the bottom line is it was a certain humble.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Starting us off this week then is Jack Killick, who has emailed in saying, "Hi chaps, been very much enjoying the podcast recently, particularly Ollie's Decade in Review miniseries, so keep up the good work." Thank you very much for that, Jack. He says, "I was at the Millwall game and Reading weren't good enough. Thought we had a steady enough first half but looked toothless in the second and played mainly sideways passes with no tempo whatsoever, seemingly playing for the draw. I thought that Yeardom and particularly Zhao were huge misses. Without the outball and a striker to hold it up, we struggled, and I thought the same against Forest. Puts too much pressure on playing out from the back and opposition teams know this. Also thought Gunter was poor going forwards, no composure and panicking with long balls most of the time. Gunter has done well, but Yeardom should come straight back in when he's fit, and Teddy Howe is more than capable as a backup for next season. One final point, I think Puskas's effort in the last two appearances isn't good enough. I know he's not fit, but he was shocking against Millwall and offered nothing. His only contribution was to sloppily give the ball away for the second goal. Keep up the good work, lads." Thank you very much for that, Jack. I suppose really kind of moving a lot of the points we've gone on so far. What I would say, the Westie, is this, you know, this idea of going away and playing for the draw. For the moment, I'm not too upset with it because Bowen has obviously done it quite a few times now and it generally has paid dividends. And when you're in the Championship and it's level, you've got 10 minutes to go, it's not a case that the home team are automatically going to be the best team and automatically going to be pushing for the winner ahead of us. So as things stand and the fact that it has worked to this moment, I'm not too upset with the whole notion that we are kind of going away, shutting up shop a little bit more and just hopefully in amongst that, not giving away easy goals.
No, I was surprised he didn't play Rinomoto instead of Adam. I thought he might go a little bit more pragmatic and try and make sure they didn't concede a goal and have a bit more legs in midfield. It's hard to disagree with that email. He's bang on. Like I say, it's all right playing counter-attacking football, but you need to have the players up front who can play it. I seem to remember sort of years ago when we had Nicky Forster, we were brilliant at that then because he could run... he could be up front on his own and cause all sorts of mayhem, whereas we haven't got that player now, and Bulldog certainly ain't going to do it. So it's a tactic they stick with. It's been successful. Let's face it, the last couple of weeks we've been to Fulham, placed that out and got results. It's worked well, and there's no reason for it not to work well. But I can't see Reading going away from home and opening up because they will just end up getting beat.
No, exactly. We're just not quite good enough to do it at the moment. And that's probably what was showcased with the Jose Gomez era and why we failed with that. Scotty, the only other message we've got from Melbourne this week, a bit of a thin one, I suppose, is perhaps we've gone the other way these days. More fans are engaged when we're winning rather than just getting angry when we lose because we're kind of sick of losing, I suppose. So
used to that.
Yeah, no, exactly. So Scotty says, "On Saturday, we were beat on the day by the best team. But we were a better team. But are we a better team than Millwall? ? I say yes. So today's result proves that we still need a lot of development work before this team reaches its maximum potential. I hope Bowen can move us forward from being hard to beat to being a top team." Now, Westie, I suppose the million-dollar question is, what is that X factor that moves you on from being hard to beat to beating top teams? And I think at the moment, If the one thing that we're kind of suffering from, the defence I don't really have a problem with. I think if you put that defence in a playoff race, it's going to hold its own relatively well. For me, it is just that attack at the moment. It is just the ability. If you look at the top teams in the Championship at the moment, obviously West Brom and Leeds are kind of far out, but Fulham have an amazing striker, Brentford have an amazing striker, Nottingham Forest have an amazing striker, Bristol City have a pretty decent one as well. Sheffield Wednesday have Stephen Fletcher, and you know it's difficult for us to kind of say that we're on that level when we don't have, with Zhao out in particular, a striker on that level.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I mean, you were there as well. Again, I'll keep going back to it. I know it sounds a bit boring, but when Jason Roberts came into Reading, they had an average side all of a sudden become world beaters. Same with Kermigan that year he had when he was scoring all them goals. We was creating very few chances that season. If you look at the stats for that year, our actual conversion rate was amazing. And that's just because he was so good. That one player can make a hell of a difference. But on the flip side, if you've got players that are not filling that role adequately, they become a hell of a weakness. And the pressure that puts on the midfield and the defence that we see against Millwall, I think they had 22 shots on goal, something like that, or more than 22 shots on goal. If you can't hold the ball up front, you are under constant barrage. You know what I mean? If you've got a player you can hit or can run the channels or has got exciting pace over the top like Long used to,
then you cause teams problems. You turn them around, you spread them out, you make it difficult for them. If you're playing Baldock up front, or even Puskas at the moment, or Boye, whoever it is, takes that role. Another player that's been disappointing, I think, last 3 or 4 weeks is Mate. The fact he hasn't been mentioned tells you that he hasn't done anything. He's a big lug that should be doing much better up front, and he doesn't. The attributes he's got physically do not get onto the pitch with him, if that makes sense. He looks like he should be a heavyweight boxer, but he goes down like a, I don't know, ballet dancer. You know, he doesn't hold his weight and his stature on that pitch like he should. And if he did, I mean, if he did, then he could play that forward role and hold up play. But he just, it's not in his game, is it? And he's another one that I'm struggling to see what he brings most of the time, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? When you think about Mate, the game away at Millwall, and I get the impression from Yaku Mate when you look at his social media and all those sort of things, that he does have a bit of a scrap in him, does get a bit annoyed and have a little bit of a fighter element to him. And you think that's absolutely great if you then go to Millwall and do all of the, you know, all of the scrapping. But yeah, no, we've moved him out to the wing. And it
He just don't do it. And you think, if you look at him compared to Zhao, I mean, Zhao's a much better footballer. He's got a better first touch. But is he physically stronger? You'd probably say no. Is he quicker? You'd probably say no. But what Zhao brings, he brings that to the pitch. You know, and he's got a great touch. He can hold a ball. If players can't get the ball off him. Whereas Mate doesn't seem to do any of that. He doesn't use his pace. He doesn't use his power. And to be honest, his first touch is grim most of the time. So he's another player that should be stepping up. And also, we're sort of, from the Gomez era, we're victims of that to a certain extent, because he basically got rid of all our wingers. So, you know, if you had Mo Barrow or something who had that threat over the top, we don't, even from wide areas, we haven't got that threat anymore, have we? So we're playing sort of strikers in forward areas, and Abita's been playing left-sided, left wing more recently. And they're not, you know, I mean, they're good players, but they're not good enough to be a major threat all the time. Like Kebays and players like that have been down the years. I think we're a victim of that as well to a certain extent.
No, I certainly don't think that we've seen the last of Mo Barrow at this football club. I don't think he's out of contract in the summer. So that would mean that I think he's probably got another year, and therefore probably got a real decent chance of showing himself under Mark Bowen, depending on where we are next season. Well, that'll hold a decent amount of weight on what happens on Wednesday night as we go to Nottingham Forest. We'll talk about that in a little bit of time. But next, let's jump into News Bites.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Okay, then, let's enter the murky world of the January transfer rumour mill. And it's pretty quiet at the moment with Reading. I suppose it's partly because of the local media is probably not quite as big as it was, not quite as experienced as it was. The club is a bit tighter and less eager to throw out whatever tidbits may have gone the local media's way in the past few years and decades. And also, I guess maybe there's just not that much happening. Maybe there aren't so many Premier League cast-offs going on for loan rather that Reading are interested in. We did have a couple of Brazilian names come up with Alexandre Matos, the incoming sporting director at the club. I suppose we're going to have to get used to some Brazilian names coming in and around the gossip and maybe into the club. Sao Paulo pair Felipe Aruna and Lizerio, the latter costing about £5 million apparently, have been linked from sources in Brazil. There's probably not too much in this at the moment, and it really would be a surprise if the club in January at least couldn't afford a serious outlay given FFP. And really, as we've seen Derby this week be punished, it's probably something we don't necessarily want to tip the boat on. However, we have splashed out on a new contract for Mark Bowen, extra 12 months for him. And Westy, I think this is the sort of this is, in the past few weeks, this has become inevitable. And in a good way, really, he's done a really good job to get the fan base on side. He's not just paid lip service to the fans for any old reason. He's been genuine with it, especially during games. And an extra 12 months, I think, is rightly deserved. And it's almost, actually, funnily enough, it's almost unthinkable now to imagine him leaving at the end of the season.
So it's great. I think, again, it gives everyone stability. We know what's going to go forward into next season. To be fair, if he was sitting in his interview
After the run he's had, then it was a great time to give him a new contract. I think a lot of fans worry that on good runs, you sort of get blinded by the good run rather than what else is going on. But like I said, I think they've got the squad there. Yeah, it needs a few tweaks here and there, but it's decent. He's definitely turned us around in the fact that we looked like we was going to get beat every week, so now we're hard to beat. And I think he's done a great job, and I think he's turned a lot of fans' opinions around. Like I said, he would as soon as he started winning. And like I said before, I don't really care who's in charge as long as they're winning. And at the moment, we're winning. So 12 months isn't that long in football. I think it protects the club more than anything. There's no big payout at the end of it if they decide to put him back to director of football or he decides to move on elsewhere. But it'd be hard on him if you didn't give him a job at the end of the season based on the fact that, let's face it, we do look like a decent outfit now where we didn't before. So, yeah, good from Reading. It sorts out for next season. We know what's going forward and he can bring his own players if he wants to.
And I'm pretty sure that his interview for the contract extension probably wasn't as easy as his first interview where he sat on both sides of the table.
Yeah, I suppose it's a little bit easier if you're interviewing yourself. But on this case, he's got the job on merit, I think.
Absolutely, and that's the good thing about it, really, is that we have actually a manager that we can maybe be a bit optimistic with and a bit proud of even at the moment. And also, any kind of lingering looks to the manager market at the moment, you're not going to find someone with more experience in the English game and who, you know, knows the club as well as Mark Bowen does. I haven't been here for almost a year now. So, yeah, it just seems like a kind of under-the-radar announcement because we're all just generally pleased with it and we'll keep looking to the future. Speaking of which, let's see how the youth teams and the women's team got on over the past weekend. The under-23s, they drew 3-3 with West Ham. They're now 8th in Premier League 2. Next up, Thursday the 30th of January, is Colchester in the Premier League Cup. The under-18s also played West Ham. They also drew, this time 1-1. They're 7th in Premier League South. They next face Everton on Saturday in the Premier League Cup. And the women's team also faced Everton. Lost 3-1, however, Chloe Kelly with a hat-trick for Everton and a Farwell-Williams penalty for Reading. They're also out of the Conti Cup after a late defeat to Arsenal in midweek. A difficult game, that always. And then just the 1-0 scoreline there in FA Cup action on Sunday. That is against the London City Lionesses. So hopefully a good result there after last season's FA Cup run that very, very nearly reached final. And speaking of FA Cup runs, we're going to be talking in the big match preview now about the Cardiff game on the weekend and, of course, now rearranged Nottingham Forest game on Wednesday evening.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
So here we go then, Wednesday night, we're back up to Nottingham Forest, Westy, and we go to a team which are now fifth on 47 points and are on a very decent amount of form. 4 wins out of 5, that one not win was the draw they had with us about 2 weeks ago where we obviously both scored in injury time, and I think we're a little bit of a victim of the circumstances here because when we were originally meant to go to them, they lost 2 in a row and only won 1 of their last 4. So the pre-postponement and post-postponement Nottingham Forest is a very different beast, and we're just going to have to hope that maybe that isn't the most important factor when we go there on Wednesday.
Yeah, again, a game's a game. Just because you're on a good run doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win, does it? As we found out this week for ourselves. Tough place to go. Keep saying it. I know it sounds a bit cliche. They're on a good winning run. They're in the playoffs. They'll be looking above them because I think if they get these 3 points, it moves them up a few slots or at least get them closer to those automatic promotion places. And the crowd will get behind them. They've got a good crowd there. And I think, listened on the radio earlier, like I did, they were saying that sort of their season tickets have sold the most that they have for quite some time, 10 years or so. And they're certainly setting themselves up to be a Premier League side. So they will be looking at this one as one they can win. And I think Reading will be fearful that it's going to be another tough away game for them, especially again without Joe and someone hold the ball up front. We could sort of come unstuck again, which is my concern in this one.
Mark Bowen has only lost 3 games as Reading manager. He's never followed up any of those 3 games with a win. We lost consecutive games against Brentford and Leeds early in the season, and we drew after that. And then we lost the Birmingham game and drew after that one as well. So not a brilliant sort of idea in terms of us. Oh no, we did win after Leeds, I suppose, but with the Wigan game, I suppose that was a bit of an anomaly in terms of the performance. It wasn't a very good performance at Wigan. And therefore, I do have the question as how does Bowen have it as a comeback manager, as it were? I think Stam was quite an impressive manager when it came to comebacks, because we get tanked 5-0 one week and then go on the next. So do we think that Mark Bowen has it in him as a good comeback manager, or are we going to actually kind of slip into a bit of a rut now?
Well, we will see, won't we? I watched some of the Luton Forest game on Sunday, and Luton had a go at Forest and scored. So there's no reason you can't have a go at them and get a goal. And if you can get the first goal and then you can sit in, who knows? That's it. I don't think Reading need to be overly fearful, but just cautious of the fact that these are a decent side. And like I say, normally when we come up against the top sides, we've struggled to get wins other than the Fulham game the other week.
Yeah, and then on Saturday we go back to the Medeski and have Cardiff in the FA Cup. We spoke about that a little bit earlier, but are we optimistic, really? We'd obviously both like a cup run, and we both like Bowen to give a reasonably strong outfit to start up, but are we actually optimistic that we can go and do it? They've only won 3 games away from home all season. This seems to me like a game that I'm kind of worried that we're going to just kind of let slip by us.
No, I hope not. Again, if he does play some of the youngsters, they're going to know that the more they win in the cup, the more games they'll be playing. So they're of motivation from that point of view. Cardiff will probably have bad memories of earlier in the season when we absolutely whooped them and we looked like world beaters. So I think I'd be disappointed if they don't go through to the next round, to be honest. I think Bowen should be looking to put out a stronger side to go through. And I think Cardiff obviously make some changes themselves. There's a lot of fringe players there that will think that they should be in the side. So it's their opportunity to go and prove it, isn't it? And if they don't, then it means they're not good enough. Simple as that.
Yeah, and Cardiff are a grand total of 3 places and 3 points above us. They're not on very good form. So their point of view going into this game is probably going to be exactly the same as ours. And when you get into the last 16, I think the last 16 is a midweek in the FA Cup this year, actually. Anything can happen. And I think this, what we've said over the past couple of years without, you know, taking away that playoff final run, but probably for the last 5 years, we got to this stage of the season and we've been kind of saying that the season's over. The season's not over in the league yet, but let's face it, there's a reasonable chance that by kind of late March it will be. And therefore, having that kind of cup run to look forward to and keep us going, it's, you know, as a fan and surely as a team, you need it as some sort of motivation.
You know what, I know it's going to sound a bit ridiculous, but compared to the last 3 or 4 seasons, this has been a great season, hasn't it?
So far. We're 16th.
Yeah, we're 16th. We're quite comfortable. We look half decent. We're getting some good results. There's still opportunity. We might get in the playoffs. It might be slim, but there's still opportunity there. And we're still in the cup. So I think if anyone rings in complaining, I think they need to look back at the last 3 seasons or so and realise, actually, this is a really good season.
Absolutely. Well, the Prediction League is still chugging along. It's kind of got a bit of a Premier League feel about it to the moment. I was the only person to predict a defeat from Millwall on Saturday. I went 1-0 though, so my lead at the top of the Prediction League is now 13 points, which is getting to, I mean, Westy, I know you've won it in the past, but I think this is verging on 106 territory now, isn't it?
Mark, to be fair, I think I've done this show now for, since I started it, I've done it for what, 11 seasons or 10 seasons? And out of all those seasons, I only ever won it once. So my record isn't as good as you may try and make out. A bit like you, I was listening back to our old show and we was on about the Super Six League. And again, I can't pick one there either. It doesn't matter what I do. I look at all the stats, go through the previous games, and I still can't pick it. So it just goes to show how hard it is. To have such a league that you've got, mate, I think you can already start polishing the trophy because it's yours.
Well, in that case, I'll take first picks then for Forest. So I will say that we are going to lose 2-1 at Nottingham Forest, because that is the sort of game that you're up against the playoff contender, very much like Millwall. I think we probably will score, because I think we might, you know, after a couple games, well, certainly after one game, a bit in the doldrums with scoring. I hope that we can bounce back out of that. But Nottingham Forest are a very decent team. They are a team who can draw a bit of a rally going, kind of as they did last time out. And ultimately, I think there is quite a decent amount of irony in football. And when you have a game that you're going to play against an out-of-form team and it gets postponed and you have to go back to theirs a few weeks later, it's often the way that you find a way to lose that game as opposed to win the initial game. So I'll go for 2-1 then, Westy. I don't know where you're going to lay your cards.
Well, I can't see a scoring, so I'm going to have to go for a 2-0 defeat, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Well, I will get everyone else's sort of previews and predictions. That's what I'm looking for. Predictions before the before that game, and we'll be back after the Cardiff game. We have got a bit of we had Nottingham Forest two weeks in a row. And by the time we come back next week, we'll be talking about the Bristol City game and then go to Cardiff again. So we'll be back next week, hopefully just after that that Cardiff game to review. Hopefully a good week as Reading hopefully get back on the horse and get back after the unbeaten run. But as we said earlier, when you've had such a long unbeaten run, the one defeat that takes it away shouldn't take the shine off what has actually been a very decent sort of Christmas period for Reading. That's over now though, sadly. And we can look forward to hopefully bringing back another few wins under our belt before the month is out. And until next time, thank you for listening and come on your arse.
It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.